education is our subject today, specifically higher education, if there is such a thing anymore. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Almost 14 years ago, the very first edition of this show was about education. Here it is again. Colleges are having problems making ends meet, and a lot of professors are out of work now. Your calls welcome at 1-800-478-8255-478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422, email talk@APRN.org. Our guest has accepted the challenge of running a college in Alaska. Meet Dr. Don Bantz on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by First National Bank Alaska, working shoulder to shoulder with Alaskan businesses for nearly a century. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Well, today the regents of the University of Alaska are meeting, and they're down to three finalists for the new president of the University of Alaska, and they may even make their decision today, probably not during this show. But that's not really our subject. Our subject is that other college in Alaska, which actually sits right next to our radio network office and studios, Alaska Pacific University. They had a search. They settled on somebody, and he is here. He took the job yesterday, has moved into the president's house, more or less, and agreed to come down the street on his second day on the job and talk with the people of Alaska on Talk of Alaska. The new president of Alaska Pacific University, Dr. Don Bantz, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thanks for having me, Steve. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, Don, you come to us from Evergreen College, but you were in Alaska before. Before we talk about Evergreen, probably we should talk about what you did in Alaska when you were here before. You got here in the 70s or 80s?
We did, early 70s. We were in Sacramento at the time working on Native American issues, and my wife was pregnant, and she had had her aunt and uncle had homesteaded in Anchorage many, many years ago before statehood. And regaled her with stories about Alaska. So she always had this dream to come up here, and she said, let's do it now. And so we did. Sent up a couple resumes and got a phone call from Alaska Federation of Natives. They said, we want to hire you. I said, don't you want to interview me? And they said, no, we checked you out in the Indian Pipeline, and we want to hire you. Can you start Monday? And it was a Thursday night.
Yeah.
And I said, sure, we'll be there. And so we came up and ran a statewide program for the Health Affairs Division.
And this was early days of, I guess, like the health aids was being experimented with?
Yes, early days of Indian self-determination as well. And my role became, worked with Indian Health Service to help work with the newly founded regional health corporations to educate them as to what it meant, Indian self-determination, and what the possibilities were. Again, the things that I've seen.
There's a history book in this. It has not been written.
I wrote a couple articles way back then.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating history, especially when I come up here and see what's happened. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's quite institutionalized now. Mm-hmm. Well, at some point, you move on from that to the Anchorage Neighborhood Health Services, right? Is that what it's called? That runs the clinic in Fairview, and even an excellent clinic there.
Well, interesting story. After my third near-death plane crash, I thought, I'm going to stay in town for a while. And I got a call from somebody saying, can you come over and work with the board? And I said, sure. And it turns out they had been shut down for administrative and medical malfeasance, and they were just a converted daycare center there, a very small facility. And came over and said, sure, I'll be happy to work with them. Great board, committed to that program. And it's a great story. You know, the feds wouldn't even talk to me because they had pulled the plug funding-wise. And we managed to do some political work and get a couple weeks funding and another couple weeks and slowly built it up. Took a couple years to put it back in shape. And then we raised the money for the new facility and built the first passive solar commercial building in Alaska.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and it was pretty exciting. At that time, nobody was even aware of green buildings. And I had to go down to Lower 48 to find an architect. The architect up here went down there and got some training and came up and helped us design this thing. And we had a lot of fun with it.
Wow. Well, now, maybe you can tell me right at this point, having accepted this challenge of APU, which I'm sure you know is a challenge, it is no stranger to the brink. It's been there a couple of times now. And we'll get around to Evergreen College and some of the innovations that that you were involved with there. But do you have a vision? Do you have a feeling for where you might want to take this college? I mean, just like you go into the health area and you take a failing health clinic and you end up making innovations in energy conservation and things like that. Have you got any thoughts about this beautiful piece of real estate you've got with these buildings and these very interesting students and a very interesting faculty?
Well, this is not even anything like the center was. This is a wonderful institution with a long history and tremendous potential, a lot of strengths to build on. I don't have a vision to come here and change it. I have a vision to come here and help them realize and deepen the strengths and the great work they're already doing. And when we came up to interview during that week, the students impressed us immediately. My wife's in health administration and policy and knows more about that subject than anybody I know. And she was talking to the students at a level she didn't realize they were undergraduates. she thought they were graduate students. They were so engaged and so informed, and they were so eager and inquisitive. So that impressed us. And then, of course, the faculty, small faculty, committed, terrific, very hospitable and open to strengthening their work. And then, of course, the board was, the board is fabulous, well-connected, well-committed, and very hospitable, as were the staff. And so we were so impressed that we just said, this is the place for us. And so we're here to help work with them and a shared vision and make this place work.
It's been a friendly school for Alaska Natives. Do you expect that to continue?
Absolutely. You know, we have the advantage of size. I mean, the scale there, roughly 600 students, and that needs to grow. I mean, it doesn't pencil out. Everybody knows that in terms of a small liberal arts college. Normally, 1,000 is kind of the break-even point. But it's got a very distinctive niche to draw on and build on, and the Alaska Native population is one of those. So we're interested, I think, in growing enrollments, you know, modestly and getting to a place where we're more financially viable.
Yeah. It's, you know, that is, you might have heard when I introduced the show, I said higher education, if there is such a thing anymore. It almost seems like education is going over to trade schoolism.
Yes.
And towards, away from helping people learn how to do critical thinking.
Yes. Well, I come from a state where their whole master plan for higher education is efficient degree production.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, that says it all. And all they care about is cranking out as many degrees for as little in money as they can. And you lose a lot with that. And what it really attracted me to APU was, you know, the product. And, you know, higher education needs to produce, you know, I hate to use a good product, but in terms of what I saw at APU, and you can do this when you have a faculty-student ratio of 10 to 1 or less, which is one of the lowest in the country. You walk into a classroom there and you see 8 or 10 students really engage with their faculty. While efficiency-wise, it's not efficient, it's very effective. And the quality of the graduates they're producing, as evidenced by their test scores, is in the top 10% of the country.
Whoa. Wow.
Top 10%. Yeah. I mean, the CLA, the Collegiate Learning Assessment Tool, which they use, it's a nationwide tool, we're scoring in 93s, 95%. Doesn't get any better than that.
So you're feeling good about the prospects and there's plenty of room for growth.
Absolutely. They're producing a quality education, top notch, and they have a very distinctive niche.
Are you, how are you at fundraising?
Well, I love fundraising. I mean,
that's part of the game.
It's part of the game and private colleges and universities. It's just what you do. And again, I had a lot of experience here with the Neighborhood Health Center, resurrecting that. Just talked to you about the Creative Center for Creative and Applied Media we built at Evergreen, and that was all private fundraising that we raised, and I had a big role in that. So I love matching donor and donee interests, and I've taught fundraising and grant writing for, 20 years now.
Hmm. Well, our guest is Dr. Don Bantz. He is the incoming president of Alaska Pacific University, which is right here in what we call the U-Mid District in Anchorage. It's, I don't know, kind of a branch of maybe Midtown. it's kind of an anonymous neighborhood there where all the roads kind of stop and they trying to figure out some way of getting a road through it. Some of us don't want that.
So I hear.
Well, and actually, he's our landlord, as a matter of fact, at Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, occupies a building which is sitting on the campus of Alaska Pacific University. Our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. If you're calling from Anchorage, 550-8422. Email is talk@aprn.org. The subject is higher education, and the guest is the new president of Alaska Pacific Universities. He has already said that the college is too small. It needs quite a few more students, and he's there to try and build it. But he says we got nothing to be ashamed of in terms of the quality of students that we're turning out and the educational experience that they get. I want to turn back to Evergreen College that you just came from, because this is not your typical college.
That's true.
As I understand it, the students have some freedom to draft their own course of education. I think it's co-op, isn't it? Still co-op?
Part of it is, yes.
Yeah. And I think it's sort of known for turning out creative types. Mm-hmm. And, you know, comes to mind the cartoonist Linda Barry and Matt Groening, who probably many people are familiar with, the guy that created The Simpsons. And I understand you actually have managed to go back to this alumnus and do a little fundraising.
We did. We finally found something he was interested in.
Well, tell me about that, because it was fascinating. We were talking a little bit before the show, and you have now on Evergreen College this media center.
Well, it's a center for creative and applied media, and it's probably the most advanced facility on the West Coast right now today, because we just finished it, and we had one of our alums come up and design it. And then we had to go out and raise the money, and the media faculty are in love with it. In fact, you know, all the faculty are going to eventually figure out how to use it in their classrooms. And so that's just an example of, again, matching the donor and the donor interests and ending up with a facility that, you know, will serve the students.
Can you, you know, you don't want to, you know, it's your second day on the job, but are there possibilities like that for APU?
Absolutely. Again, I don't know what those are yet, but my first job here is to listen and learn from the students, from the faculty, the board, and everyone, the staff, and figure out what the culture is, what their aspirations are, and come to a shared vision. And once we've got that, then you go out and try to, you know, peddle the different pieces of it to different entities. We rely on community support. You know, we don't have the public support, so in terms of state dollars. So we rely on tuition and private fundraising.
Yeah. It just sounds grim, to tell you the truth. The prospects just don't seem all that great.
Well, you could say that for higher education right now.
Yes.
In the United States. The higher ed's in trouble. I come from a state where they disinvested 33% in higher education public funding. So we're cutting our budgets 33%. That's a huge whack. And yet, to compete in a global economy, you have to invest in a workforce. China gets it. India gets it. Japan, Korea, down the list, Spain, Ireland, all those countries get it. We're not. We're disinvesting. And it's not surprising that their economies are on the rise. Ours is on the decline. So, and I was happy to hear coming up here that Governor Parnell gets it, you know, with his Promise Scholarship Program. That's the kind of investment we need to make in the future. We need to produce the quality higher education graduates that can compete in the global economic workforce.
Well, I'm thinking about what do we have in Alaska? Where is our areas going to be? And if you look at actually what's happening, you know, in terms of our actual economic growth, well, we've been shrinking like everybody else. Mm-hmm. The growth area has been healthcare and military and government. So here you are, Doctor of Public Administration. Are those areas that APU might be able to move into? I mean, it seems like the University of Alaska has put a lot of stress on health. What about you guys?
Yes, and we will. We have, you know, AA degree, bachelor's degree, master's degree. Yeah, that's a very strong area for us, as is as counseling psychology. So we have to find our distinctive niches, and we will. And we have several distinctive competences. Students will come and get a very different education. I talked about 33% cut. University of Washington, which is the flagship university there, their introductory biology class went from 400 students to 800 students.
Boo.
800 students in a classroom with two tiers and microphones. And I mean, that's tough to get an education that way. You contrast that with APU with 8 students in a classroom. I mean, it's just not comparable. And so that's what we can offer. And that's what we have to continue to offer and do it well, because, you know, the money you spend for a private education is significant in this country. And even we're pricing the public education out of many of the students and parents. So we have to produce a really top-notch product.
Well, I've been really fascinated by the students that I've been dealing with, you know, because one thing about being in my line of work is I meet a broad spectrum of people, and it seems that contrary to the way the students might have been in colleges in the 1960s when I was getting my education, they're looking at their education as an investment from the very beginning.
Yes.
And it kind of, because it is, because there's a lot of money, there's student loans, there's money's got to be paid back. You know, maybe you'll get a scholarship, maybe you'll have, good enough scores to compete. But I'm amazed, for instance, at the internships, competition for internships, looking for internships that really could lead to something. It just seems that the rubber's meeting the road a lot more than it used to, you know what I mean?
Yes, yes. Well, and you have to pick your field. I mean, I know that just in the one day I've been here, was hearing that some of the interns, there's a higher demand for interns in certain fields. Outdoor studies, for example, one of our really, you know, distinctive areas. They can't get enough interns. So it depends on the field. And you have to sell yourself, and that's part of the education process, is figuring out how to market yourself to, you know, interns and future employers as well.
You know, you studied public administration in your, when did you go to college?
I did. In fact, I studied, I began that up here. I got my master's at University of Southern Cal, and a very innovative program with UAA created to partner with the University of Southern Cal to start the doctoral program in public administration. So I got to do my first class up here, and that led me to finish it down there.
Well, you know, I'm thinking about all those people who studied computer programming, and you know, when it came time to get in the computer business had changed. And they asked some of the high-tech people, well, what sort of, how should they have educated themselves? And the answer was, well, you can't replace the ability to do critical thinking. You can't replace, you know, there is a premium on being able to grab hold of a situation and really examine and analyze it and come up with a creative answer. And I guess you know where I'm going with this because you're smiling. It's a liberal education. But how can we sell it?
I had to sell that for 10 years at Evergreen, and I will continue. But, you know, employers, you look at employer surveys, it's what they want. They don't want the narrowly trained technician because they're going to have to retrain them every few years anyway. They want the person with the cognitive complexity, the capacity for introspection, and the critical empathy. Those kind of skills. They want written communications, oral communication. They want team players. They want folks that can work across difference, across cultures, across nations.
Yeah.
Those kind of skills, all those are the strengths of a liberal arts education. Liberal allies free the mind from ignorance. And you start there. A life of, the idea of a life of ideas, of the mind. You're an artist. You know that art is a great way to play with left and right brain. We've trained too many narrow technicians that can't cross and play that and develop their capacity to be creative. And creative complexity is one of the keys of a liberal arts education. And our graduates all over the world, businesses, we do employer surveys, and I know APU does as well. How are students doing? Are they getting the skills that you want? And those feedback loops are very important.
Yeah. Intuition is an odd thing. Artists work on their intuition. They learn to trust intuition to a degree, you know, hard for other people to conceive of, maybe. And yet intuition is a tough sell out in the world because it's scary. When a person can know something will work but not quite know why, they need to have the ability to write a memo too.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, I think the best expression I ever heard was Madeline D'Eng said, "Your passion and your intellect should be working together, making love." It's about the reason side and the passion side, the intuition side. And everything about cognitive complexity is that way. It's two supposedly contradictory things coming together in a synthesis. That integration is what it's all about. And when I talk about liberal arts, I talk about deep learning. And that's making those neural networks and the connections to get to a place where you have that unity. You can do that synthesis. You can do that reflection. Too often, all in the radio and other networks, it's black and white. It's one way. And cognitive complexity is where it's at. That's what the world is like, and that's how you have to deal with the situations you face in any work environment now.
Don Bantz is our guest. He's the incoming president of the Alaska Pacific University. Our telephone number, 1-800-478-8255. And Dawn joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Dawn.
Hi, Steve. Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I'm actually going to have to cut this short because I'm on my way to class at APU. I can't tell you how excited I am to be going to APU. I'm in the Master's of Science in Outdoor and Environmental Education. And ever since I started, from the very beginning, my professors have allowed me to really pursue the passion that I'm interested in, bicycle advocacy. So every one of my assignments, they've allowed me to model and design it for the community. And I can't tell you how much more work it has been because it isn't just a work. It isn't just a classroom project. It's a real life, putting it out there, working in the community, networking. And I really can't say enough about how much I enjoy my classes at APU. And I want to welcome our new president.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Dawn.
Okay, I got to go.
Get to class. All
right. Bye-bye. Yeah, hop on your bike. So are you can pretty much personally get to know all your students.
What a joy. That was the best thing about this place. The students, the faculty, everyone, the staff. I can know everyone.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I'm so excited.
It is amazing. So what's your first new building going to be?
Not there yet. Although I understand a student center is very much on the interest of the students.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah. Well, there's considerable real estate there. So it would seem that there's room for growth.
Sure, there's room for growth, but again, it has to be balanced. And, they've done some work on the periphery for commercial development to bring in some earned income, which I think was smart. But, and there's a balance. How much of that do you do versus keeping the nature of the campus? That's always an issue. Got, as I understand it, a nice huge farm out in the Wasilla area, 600-700 acres out there, potential in the future. So,
A
lot of room to grow.
Wow, yeah. I wonder if Danny Constantine knows about that. And I'm serious. One thing that I found out for the last 2 years, there's been extreme interest in producing our own food in Alaska, which, from the professional point of view, they kind of look askance at it. But in terms of these farms that sell shares and things like that, they're maxed out every year now. And there's Full Circle Farms has a whole bunch of Alaska people now. And so there probably is something to be done with that piece of land out there.
Absolutely. Evergreen has an organic farm for years, and students from all over the country come to study there. So, and it's a very, it's a good, legitimate field.
And it's something you're aware of. All right, let's go to Jason, joins the program from Anchorage. Jason, welcome to Talk of Alaska with Dr. Don Bantz.
Hi, I just have two questions. One would be, is there any possibility of using digital textbooks, which would include all kinds of media and video and that kind of thing? I don't know if that would something that you'd be able to do. And the other question is about online or combination online and face-to-face classes. And I don't know what APU currently uses, whether they're already using all digital textbooks or whether there's any online or combo face-to-face and online classes. But do you have any comments about that sort of thing?
Sure. Yeah, Jason. Again, I haven't. I think the digital textbook, that's obviously up to the faculty, and I think some maybe. I don't know exactly what they're doing yet. Again, it's only my second day on the job. But I do think, yes, we're very involved in online work, and I like the what I call the high touch, high tech, you know, approach, kind of the hybrid of online and face to face. And we do some most of our courses are some combination of that. Some are more online than face to face. So yes, we do both, the hybrids in kind of both ends of the continuum.
Okay, thanks. Mm-hmm.
Jason, thank you so much for your call. Telephone number 1-800-478-8255. Email is talk@APRN.org. It's a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Our guest is Dr. Don Bance. He's the incoming president of Alaska Pacific University. One thing that probably a lot of Alaskans think when they think APU is the ski team.
Yes.
Including you, huh?
My favorite activity, personally. And I was I was recruited for a lot of presidencies, and I was always worried about having to deal with football teams and coaches and all that. So when I heard that their big sport was cross-country skiing, I said, that's for me.
Have you been on those trails yet?
I've been unpacking, and as soon as I'm done unpacking, I'm going to get those skis out and hit it. Thanks for the beautiful spring snow.
Yeah, well, they will blow your mind. There's a reason for why we turn out champion skiers
yes.
in this area. It's amazing. So how are you having meetings? What happens in your first week on the job there?
Well, of course, 8 o'clock the first day yesterday was a meeting, and that's what academics do. We meet, and it's a very collaborative setting. And so, yes, yeah, so they've been a little easy on me the first week. A lot of giving me piles of binders to read and get oriented. But sure, there's meetings.
Mm.
Faculty meeting tomorrow.
Yeah. How about in terms of meeting the students? Will there be some kind of assembly or something? Has that already happened?
Students are terrific. We found out that they're actually having a reception dance for us a week from Saturday.
All right.
And as I understand, it's a formal, whatever Alaska formal means. And the theme is dance your pants off.
And you're comfortable with this?
Hey, we'll be there. We'll be dancing our bances off.
Could we have a brewing decorum issue here? Or what they call a military bearing? He's smiling and not saying a word. It's Talk of Alaska. Dr. Don Bance is our guest. Our telephone number, 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK, email talk@APRN.org. And it's a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. More talk about higher education and small schools, private schools, as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from BP, unlocking Alaska's resource potential. Every day, people all over Alaska are discovering how public transportation benefits them, their businesses, and their communities. Public transportation in Alaska provides 7 million rides a year to work, medical appointments, shopping, school, social opportunities, wherever people need to go. With public transportation available, the going is good. Find out more at goodgoingalaska.com. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Mobility Coalition, a nonprofit organization. Support for APRN Iditarod coverage comes from Wells Fargo, providing financial tools and resources for purchasing a home or planning for the future. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A.
Alaska Pacific University. It's got very small classes. The students are in small groups around their teachers. Some of that's got to change. They need more students. They're going to have to expand. And the guy in charge of this is our guest today, Dr. Don Bantz. But he is not really speculating about where the university might go, Alaska Pacific University. Instead, we're kind of asking you to. Where do you think they should expand? What are the areas where higher education really needs to consider some investment in Alaska? 1-800-478-8255, the telephone number. Well, how does it work with a private college? As you said, you've got to balance the books. You've got a income from the property holdings. You have some major donors, I've noticed.
Yes.
Buildings named after them and so forth. It's a church-related college. It was originally Alaska Methodist University. Does the Methodist denomination throw anything in?
Well, those roots are still there, and I think the philosophy is more spiritual and moral character than it is, you know, specifically a particular religion. But they, you know, they're still strong supporters, as they have been nationwide, for higher education. The church has done wonders, you know, in terms of educational facilities nationwide. So, but it was originally called Alaska Methodist. So,
yeah, I think there was one. I think there was one in Seattle, and then
yes.
one in Alaska.
Yes.
And you know, over the years, the church relation has been kind of de-emphasized. And indeed, there's a whole lot of Catholic theology being taught there, for instance. So it's definitely ecumenical, and the thrust is ecumenical. But is it religious fundamentally there?
Well, again, a second day there, I don't sense that. Again, I think during talking to the board and interviewing process, they're interested in spirituality. In character building, and a liberal arts education. So I didn't get any strong sense that, you know, it had to be one particular religion, you know. So I didn't feel that. And they didn't ask me if I was, you know, a member of the church.
Well, here's a tough one that's kind of related. Doug North, the outgoing president, basically just unilaterally one day censored an art exhibition. And it wasn't the first time this had happened. And he said, look, it's just not, I don't like the taste of it, and it's not appropriate for we're going to have children walking by this, and we're not going to have this. End of story. Over. And I'm wondering what your attitude is. I mean, you come from Evergreen College. That's a very arts-friendly college, mm-hmm. to say the least. I'm just wondering your thoughts on that.
Well, I won't comment on that specific issue, but I can tell you where I stand. I'm a very passionate believer in academic freedom and freedom of expression. I mean, our country was founded on those principles. And I think the function of art is to challenge, you know, to interrogate, to provoke. And so I'd be, we've had some very provocative installations at Evergreen. And I think we usually stand on the side of academic freedom and expression. And you can have the religious big signs up, the anti-abortion signs up. It's very, you know, it's harmful and on kids. But we respect their rights to do that. And so I will always fall on that side, respecting the right of freedom of expression.
Our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255. Don Bantz is our guest. He's the new president of Alaska Pacific University in Anchorage. And David joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, David.
Morning, Steve. And morning, Dan. Welcome back to Alaska.
Thank you.
I was just curious, you know, the Western education institutions in the state have had a very difficult time getting in line with the needs of the indigenous people here in the state. And I'm wondering how, with you coming on and your experience within the Native community, is going to add to the university and the attraction of Native students?
Well, it's certainly a priority of mine. I know we've got some good indigenous programs, and I want to. That's one of the first things on my list is to dig into those and see how they're doing and what they're doing. And I certainly want to get around and talk to the native corporations and as many native people as I can, because I have, you know, a lot of old connections there and a lot of affinity. So,
Yeah, that sounds really good. There is a need, and not only with the corporations, but also within the tribal organizations, down to the village level. So there's such a need, and I'm just, again, welcoming you back to Anchorage, and hopefully this transition into the APU, and hopefully you can reach out to the rural students, predominantly Native students, I guess, specifically. So, again, welcome back, and thanks.
Thank you, David. Yes, and you know, in our RANA program, the Rural Alaska Native program, was something I'm going to look into in depth. So, thanks for the call.
Thanks, David. you probably know there's been a bit of a controversy about the governor's merit-based scholarship program. People tend to favor the scholarships. Might not like all the money, but they tend to favor the scholarships. But there is a kind of a dispute as to whether there ought to be a needs element in there as well as a merit element. What do you think?
I haven't seen, I haven't heard, you know, I've heard of that controversy. I haven't had a chance to look into it. I do know this. I mean, there's one startling fact that always in higher education, one half of the students that show up for college are not college ready. I mean, think about that. One half. That means we've got to spend a lot of money, and particularly in the public higher education, on remediation. So I'm focused on whatever it takes to help get students get the courses they need, and if there's incentives for scholarships that helps them get those courses and keep those grades up and be college ready, then I think it's a good investment.
Yeah, I've heard that from people who teach in higher education over and over again. Wait a minute. We're getting these kids and we got to do remedial stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
The state doesn't want to pay for it twice. Rightly so.
Yeah. But it's a problem.
It is a huge problem.
Let's go to John, joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Dr. Don Bantz. John.
Well, thank you. And I want to welcome you to Alaska as the new president of APU. I'm the pastor of St. John's United Methodist Church, and we've had a long history, so I'd like to offer the first invitation for a public speaking opportunity for you at St. John as soon as possible, because we want to talk more how we can, as United Methodists, continue our tradition of support and the foundation of the university.
Thank you. I accept, and I will work with my scheduler to make that happen.
Yeah. We hope that United Methodist can find a greater role in the university in the future, and that your being here and being so much in love with Alaska gives us a lot of hope.
Thank you so much, John.
And good luck to you, and what a wonderful program you've arranged for us this morning.
All right.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Pastor John. That's great. The church is heard from. I think this is the point where I go off on morality. I'm beginning to reach the conclusion that people don't even know what morality is anymore. And I'm wondering, to me, when there's a philosophic grounding for morality studies. It's not so much in theology as it is in just simply examining how people thought through the idea of right and wrong in the 17th century. I don't see that being taught anywhere. And I'm wondering if it ever will be. What do you think?
Well, you know, I went through public administration program, administration, and read all the textbooks, and came to a class once when doctoral program where we read novels, literature, good literature. And I was really upset with that, thinking I paid money to read literature. And then I realized that I was learning more from reading good literature about the human condition, morality, everything else, than I was in these textbooks. And I think that's what's wrong with Wall Street and everywhere else, is you get trained in a certain ethos, and you forget to read about the human condition, the morality, and you lose that grounding. And good literature, and I've since incorporated into all my programs, Dickens, Kafka, Solzhenitsyn. I learned more about the art of public administration and human condition and morality than those textbooks, because it resonates with the way we learn, you know, the human experience, and it makes those connections. It's not as abstract. It's real. And so, again, I think going back to the liberal arts, that's where the humanities and good literature, you can get that grounding.
So you don't need Schopenhauer, huh? You can go right to, say, Thomas Hardy, Ernest Hemingway, Scott Fitzgerald.
I'm biased.
Emile Zola. But it is true, you know, it's certainly novels, if you took the moral content out of novels, you'd probably eat up about 80% of the literature, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I never really thought of it that way. Well, let's go to Christine, joins the program from Juneau. Christine, welcome to Talk of Alaska from Juneau with Dr. Don Bantz.
Hi, Steve. Thanks. And I look forward to someday talking with you again soon about cat chairs. But I am a welcome, Dr. Bantz. I'm an alumni of Alaska Methodist University way back in the olden days. And I would have to say that in talking about some of the issues you brought up about how to increase enrollment, I wanted to point out a program that had been going on way back in the 70s, but the summer program that brought kids from all over Bush, Alaska. And I believe it might have been, there might have been money from the Native corporations, but I did a summer session in 69 or 70, whichever year it was. And most of the kids that I met that were there for that summer program, David Sam and several people from Sitka, I remember, ended up being full-time students at AMU. So it really did bring kids to the campus. The other thing I was going to mention, going back to what you spoke about earlier in what directions to grow, I'm not one of those healthcare types of people, but it seems like a no-brainer when all around me, I know when I'm in my hometown of Kodiak and I meet students who are in the pre-nursing program there and even here in Juneau, that they always say, well, there's only room for 12 students every other year or some crazy thing when they're doing that feeding program into UAA. And it seems to me when this state is still paying nurses to come up here in all of our hospitals around the country to these little traveling nurses that come for months at a time, that it's kind of a no-brainer that the university perhaps should expand into the health field. So that's my suggestion.
Well, thank you, Christine. I'm a big fan of summer programs for, you know, kids to get them to high school or get them from high school into a college level experience and be on a campus. So that's something I would certainly want to look into. Say hello to David Sam. I remember him from
He called. That was David.
That
he
was
called
David
earlier. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't get the last name. Yeah. I'm sorry,
what,
David.
David called. I missed it. Didn't
yeah, I missed it too.
I recognized his voice.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and in terms of nursing ed, gosh, it's a problem everywhere. And I'm not ready to say we could jump in there, but I do think health administration and health services we're definitely in that ball game in big time.
Okay, good luck.
Thanks.
All right, Christine, thank you for your call from Juneau. We're starting to get the shout outs and the alumni. We haven't really had anybody from the AFN years of the Native Neighborhood Health Center years, Don Bantz, but maybe that'll be coming. We have this one from Sue, and it's kind of along the same lines of the advanced placement observation that we just had, which is the idea of bringing kids in before they go to college to find out what the college is really like. Sue asked this question: once upon a time, we had a vibrant community college program at UAA that met in various high schools in the evening and often with adjunct professors. This has gone by the wayside for various reasons. These were accredited as well as non-accredited, but they met a need. Do you see a need for a program like this? I guess a community engagement question here.
Second day on the job, I'm not prepared to tackle that one. Obviously, I know I have talked to faculty and and get a sense of the lay of the land in terms of our strategic directions and the board. And that's one of the first priorities. We need to set up a strategic plan and decide where we're going to grow and how. And
that's probably going to be the hardest thing.
Yes.
Because there's so many possibilities.
Yes. And again, we have to make sure they're financially viable, that there's a market out there, and that it fits our distinctive competence. Given our size, we don't want to get into too many areas and spread in areas that we don't have, that stretches us and we're not prepared to handle. So those are very collaborative decisions that the faculty, board, and administration will work on.
Yeah, but generally speaking, community engagement, you're for it?
Absolutely. I'm going to be out there as much as I can be.
Yes. And faculty involvement and the using remote locations, you got no real problem with that?
You have to. I mean, one of the callers talked about how useful and practical. That's the classic Deweyan notion that, a useful, practical education and getting students doing meaningful things, making a difference in the community. That's where it's at.
All right. Let's go to Cami, joins the program from Fairbanks. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Cami, with Dr. Don Bantz.
Hi. I want to welcome him to what I know as AMU. I graduated back in 68, and you are in charge of, to me, the best college I've gone to, although I've gone to colleges, California, Oregon, all up and down the coast there. And it is one where I wish my grandchildren to at least get their first year. It's not so much that children coming out of high school don't have the courses. Many have the courses and have the knowledge. But when they go into a university where they are one in tiers and tiers of students, and they never can ask a question, they can never have the one-to-one relationship with professors that is so much a part of the campus there at APU. I mean, where else can you actually go to a professor's house with all the students and have a formal Japanese tea service? I mean, and they take such care of each person and give them a moral compass to take throughout their life. It is truly marvelous, and good luck.
Thank you so much, Cami. Wow.
Very good. It's Talk of Alaska. Dr. Don Bantz, the incoming president of Alaska Pacific University. It would appear it's an operation with a great deal of room for growth and opportunity. As Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ACS. With Android on ACS, an app is available to listen to NPR programming on your phone. Complete details at acsalaska.com. And by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
His second day on the job, the new president of Alaska Pacific University, Dr. Don Bantz, is our guest. Our email address is talk@APRN.org, and we got some calls stacked up. This one from Trixie. As the mom of a homeschooled eighth grader, similar to the last call, really, from Cami, I think APU is a great fit for my child. I like small classes, liberal arts, critical thinking, all the things we do already. We're also lower middle class. How can my child attain a degree at APU without setting her up for a heavy debt load or make me work triple overtime? Mm-hmm. Well, there's the classic problem, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's true. And obviously, one of the things that priorities of ours is to raise as much money as we can for scholarships to offset that burden. And that's one of the reasons I'm going to work hard as I can on this governor's initiative to these performance scholarships. I think that would help offset some of the burden as well. But we do have numerous scholarships, and I think you have to be savvy about those and work with the staff to see if that's a possibility. But I wouldn't write it off just you know, without looking into it. I would encourage you to check with financial aid offices, and if the student has the interest and motivation, and see what you can put together in terms of a package.
What we're hearing from the callers, Don, is I notice kind of a drift of rural kids might not be comfortable on a giant institutional mm-hmm. campus, and that it might help them, at least in the first year or two, to go to a smaller place like APU, and we're hearing from people for which that's been a great benefit already. So I'm wondering, is there the possibility for partnerships to where APU can have maybe a junior college role at times?
Well, we do have AA degrees already. And so in terms of partnerships, I'm certainly going to look to, again, some Native corporations to develop partnerships with villages and see what we can do there. But we do have the Rural Alaska program already, where we take the education to the villages and to the students online. Going to have to look into that more to see, you know, I know they've got, as everywhere, they have challenges financially. It takes a lot of support. Just spent a whole 3 years with trying to do this throughout Washington. We had Gates Foundation, NSF, Lumina Foundation, big support. It takes a lot of energy and time and care and feeding of those networks and online, because you have to have that high-touch stuff online somehow. You can't just have an online learning. And so how do you get that to a remote site? It's always a challenge.
Yeah, we are getting a little bit better connectivity, as you'll discover.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so.
Coming. It's coming. Yeah, right. But, I mean, when you just think about the challenges of broadband in Alaska, you got to hand it to the Agriculture Department and the others that are actually throwing money into this mm-hmm. to make it happen. Because certainly it can make a huge difference in the economy in a number of ways, not just for education, but for telecommuting, for viability of even living in a remote location. If you've got connectivity, you can still work.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Let's go to Vicki, joins the program from Heidelberg. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Vicki.
Hi, I'm just happy to say I'm happy to hear Don is back in the country. I worked with him 30-some years ago at AFN.
Whoa.
Yeah, so, yeah, I have college-age kids, and I'm really happy to hear. We have a good president there, and I have two kids trying to finish college, two graduates, and it's always good to have an option. So, and one thinking of a health career.
That's great.
Thanks, Don.
Oh, good to hear from you, Vicki.
Bye.
All right, Vicki in Heidelberg. Let's go to Skagway and Ashley. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Dr. Don Bance, Ashley. Ashley in Skagway is not online anymore. He left the building. Well, yeah, it's so really unfair to ask you specific questions when you're just here in your second day on the job. It's pretty clear that you had a great connection with Alaska when you were last here. What really drew you away?
From Evergreen?
From Alaska.
Oh, from Alaska. Oh, well.
Was it the opportunity? Or?
No, the education system failed my daughter. She was...
But she's doing okay now.
Doing okay now, but, you know, she was Montessori raised and really ready for kindergarten and first grade, and they labeled her a troublemaker, and she was bored stiff. And we asked her to get tested. They said no. We privately tested, highly gifted, embarrassed the teacher and the principal. We knew she had no future there. And so Joan decided to go out, look for a private school for gifted and talented kids, and we found a great one in Seattle.
Wow.
So she moved down, and I realized that, and then she went to school at Seattle U, and I realized I'm going to have to move back to join them because they're not coming back. They're having such a great experience. So education. Is the reason we left.
So then you end up getting a gig in Olympia. That's not quite Seattle, is it? It's a long ways around there.
Yes. It's a good move, though.
Yeah. And you were there how long?
22 years.
Wow.
Great place.
Yeah. So. It's fairly small still, isn't it?
Well, it's 5,000 students, so it's getting up there.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have regrets? I mean, it seems
from leaving
like
Alaska?
Well, no, from leaving Evergreen College.
Oh, no, no. No. I was ready to leave. Like I say, I was ready for a presidency, and I had very selective criteria. It had to be in the West, in a beautiful setting, small private liberal arts. And, you know, and there just weren't many around. And then this job came up, and it was like, that's it. We're going for that one.
So do you, I mean, you don't have the same kind of role that the president of the University of Alaska would have.
No.
In terms of going and schmoozing the legislature and stuff like that for public funding. But nonetheless, there are still political aspects to it.
Sure.
You know, for instance, you say, I'm gonna roll up my sleeves on the scholarship program right away.
Mm-hmm.
Are there other areas where you can see yourself getting involved as a university president in Alaska that you already know?
Well, there's the art of the earmark. And so certainly that's a possibility.
Why am I not surprised?
I won't leave that out. Pursue those options. But, you know, you have to develop the not only the relationships with the business and local community here, but you have to develop the legislative relationships as well. And I will. I've spent a lot of time in Juneau when I was here before. And
really?
In the old days, oh, boy, it was wild and woolly down there. And I really enjoyed the Alaska politics. And in fact, I was recruited to run for a representative in Fairview at the time. And that's when we had to leave the state. So I love Alaska politics.
Yeah. Well, tell me what the impetus was for the neighborhood health services, because this just seems like compared to most clinics I know, it's kind of a jewel. It's very friendly. Its fees are completely on a sliding scale, and it seems that the degree of professionalism there is absolutely outstanding. And there it sits in Fairview.
Well, community health centers are a great model for healthcare in this country. And I know they've been expanded under Obama. And it looks like, you know, healthcare reform is, in my college days, we thought it would happen back then. Another 20 years, we thought it would happen. And it's slipping away right now because we're not willing to have a public option. You know, and the community health centers are a public option. They deliver quality care on a sliding fee, and that's the way we set it up. You know, we could have gone many different ways when we set that up initially, but we chose to work with the local medical community and the local dental community and not compete with them. You know, we have a very distinct population market there and made sure we weren't competing with them. So it was intentionally set up that way, and it is working.
Well, I want to thank you very much. I'll let you get back to work.
Thanks, Steve.
Dr. Don Bantz has been our guest. He's the new president of Alaska Pacific University. You'll probably be hearing more from him in the future. Dave Waldron at the controls, BD Trentina and Pat Yak on the telephone, and I'm Steve Heimel. Thank you so much for listening.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network. Support for APRN Iditarod coverage comes from Wells Fargo, committed to supporting communities and Alaska residents beyond just their banking needs. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. Every day, people all over Alaska are discovering how public transportation benefits them, their businesses, and their communities. Public transportation in Alaska provides 7 million rides a year to work, medical appointments, shopping, schools, social opportunities, wherever people need to go. With public transportation available, the going is good. Find out more at goodgoingalaska.com. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Mobility Coalition, a nonprofit organization. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.